Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. And there is so much news this week. We could take about 5 hours to get through some of the major headlines and some of the ones that will affect you. Some very big stories. As an example, Larry Hogan, the governor of Maryland, opposing the congressional maps passed by the state Senate, utilized his gubernatorial veto powers at a press conference on Thursday and basically vetoed all of the redistricting and the gerrymandering. And it's something, of course, they do every 10 years. The states have the opportunity to redraw district boundaries, and that's supposed to reflect changes in the population. But according to Hogan, the governor says maps were given an A grade for fairness from the Princeton Gerrymandering Project report card, while the Senate's maps received an F. He said the focus of the legislature this week has been to make even the worst and most gerrymandered districts in America even worse. These maps disenfranchise voters, they violate the Voting Rights Act, and they are in violation of numerous state and federal laws. I just thought we'd start off on a high note here in the state of Maryland. What else is going on? How about that inflation? When's the last time you went to the gas station and filled up, huh? 58% increase year over year. Had a burger recently or any beef? Go to the grocery store, 23% higher year over year. 31% increase in the cost of used cars, 33% cost increase in energy over the past year. Inflation is at its highest level since 1982. But have no fear, because the Build Back Better program is going to take care of all of that. Jared Bernstein is on the Council of Economic Advisors. He spoke yesterday from the White House lawn.
The Building Back Better plan has no impact on the kind of inflation we're talking about right now. It doesn't make it better. It doesn't make it worse. What it does is it eases long-term inflationary pressures.
Okay, yeah, sure. You buy that? Well, how does Lindsey Graham feel about the whole BBB, Build Back Better program?
Do not sell a lie to the American people. It is a lie to say that these programs cost $1.75 trillion because it's a lie to believe they'll sunset. The combination of historic highs in inflation and the true cost of this bill should require the Democratic Party to abandon Build Back Better.
Well, let's hope they do. We'll see what happens. We'll talk to John Gizzi about where that stands coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. Joe Manchin, hanging tough. Kyrsten Sinema, hanging tough so far. One interesting piece of news this week, the conviction of the former Empire actor Jussie Smollett from Empire. He was convicted Thursday in connection with the allegations that he had faked a racist and homophobic attack on himself in January of 2019, and then lied to Chicago police about the alleged incident. Convicted of 5 counts. They're all felonies. They're disorderly conduct, but it's serious. How serious is it? We'll ask Jim Trusty coming up a little bit later on in this hour. Of course, Jim is our legal expert here on the program. Got something special for you this morning. We're going to talk to Governor Mike Huckabee. That'll be coming up right after the 6:30 news. And the governor's got some interesting things to say about Washington and, trying to get everybody on the same page, maybe. How did he do it when he was governor? We'll ask him about that. And the most interesting part for you is that he has a Christmas special that will premiere on Newsmax TV. It comes out Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, and it's Mike Huckabee and Christmas in America, and he's going to tell us about the show as well. So it'll be fun to talk to the governor coming up right after the 6:30 news here on WMAL. Other news of the week of interest, just a couple of headlines. You've heard this, but a couple of these headlines were kind of interesting. CNN fires Chris Cuomo Fired CNN anchor Chris Cuomo reportedly will not receive severance. Chris Cuomo's book pulled from publication after CNN firing and accusation of sexual harassment. Anyway, enough said about that. We have a lot to cover here on the program this morning, and Jennifer Harper is going to join us right after the traffic and weather coming up here next. And we're going to be talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer later on in the program about the situation on the Ukraine border. Where are we at now? KT McFarland will join us. And, of course, earlier in the week, President Biden and President Putin had a little powwow. How did that turn out for us? Well, we'll ask Tony about the military side. We'll ask KT about the foreign policy side of it. That's coming up as well this morning. And a couple of other cases in the news. Ghislaine Maxwell trial has been proceeding, and we'll get the latest on that from Jim Trusty. And you may have seen the crazy prosecutor in Philadelphia. Wow, this guy's nuts, and we're going to talk with Jim about that. He's the guy that says, oh, there's no crime problem in Philadelphia, even though the murder rate's up 13%. 523 people murdered in Philly this year, but there's no crime problem in Philadelphia. Mr. Krasner, the DA there, should be recalled. Anyway, 6:16, and I got to get this in real quick. Hillary Clinton read her victory speech. I mean, Stacey Abrams thinks she's the governor of Georgia, and now Hillary Clinton thinks she's still president. What can I say? Willie Geist asked her about it.
What compelled you to sit down and revisit that speech?
I wanted to be as helpful as I could to the viewers and to the process of being in a master class. And I admit, I was somewhat doubtful. I didn't, as you know, write a concession speech, because even though we had a lot of bumps those last 10 days, I still thought, you know, we could pull it out. And our polling and analytics suggested we could.
And we could not spend any further time on Hillary Clinton this morning. So anyway, 6:16, it's the Saturday morning update. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Between the two beltways in Maryland, on the BW Parkway northbound, there is a crash in Greenbelt right after the NSA. Now, keep in mind, traveling between the two beltways on 95, you should find all lanes clear, northbound or southbound. On the Maryland side of the beltway, no delays, inner loop or outer loop. In Montgomery County on 270, it's clear, northbound and southbound. And on Route 50 in Prince George's County, between the beltway and the Bay Bridge, no delays on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. Very warm and windy out ahead of a strong cold front. Temperatures today near 70 degrees, which would be a record high for the day. Also have the chance for some showers and storms, some gusty storms along the cold front later on this evening. Thinking anytime after 5 o'clock, continuing through 10, 11 o'clock tonight, a wind advisory has been issued for the entire D.C. area. As we head later on overnight, winds will diminish some, still breezy as we get through early tomorrow morning. Lows back in the 30s to near 40 degrees. Highs tomorrow cooler under mostly sunny skies near 50 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Ligon at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
52 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:18 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
The Saturday morning update continues. We're glad you've joined us, and we're always glad when Jennifer Harper joins us. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Rick.
Just about the time we were sort of psychologically getting past the entire COVID-19 pandemic panic, all of a sudden the Omicron variant pops up. And what is that causing as you look at society? I mean, you always look at kind of the big picture of what's going on the societal scene. What are you seeing with the variants now in the news?
Well, you're definitely right about all of that. And right now we are in a COVID fear bubble. That's a new phrase you can use about that, because there are people who thought we were coming along, coming around the clubhouse turn and going to get better, but then along comes the Omicron and here we are. So the COVID fear bubble, that as a term, that is coming from Nate Ashworth. He is the founder of electioncentral.com, always an interesting news site. And he says that many Americans are not just numb to the fears of coronavirus variants, but they're numb to the renewed drumbeat of doom and gloom over COVID in general, he said. And, you know, he cited, like a lot of folks do, Dr. Anthony Fauci, currently the director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, also still chief medical advisor to President Biden. And here's what he had to say. This is, again, Nate Ashworth talking. He said, just like that, seemingly overnight after Thanksgiving, we were being gifted with press conferences, and it felt like March of 2020 all over again. Set aside all the advancements we've made since then, they seem to mean nothing. Now there are states like Oregon talking about permanent mask mandates in some settings, because for many public officials, this level of control will never end, and they don't want it to end. I thought that was a pretty interesting point. But also, let's look to Dr. Mark Siegel. He's a medical doctor. He also offered his perspective on the situation. He wrote an op-ed that was published this week. He says, we have a viral problem here in the United States, and it isn't the new COVID variant. The much larger problem goes beyond COVID to the fear it creates. For many Americans, the thought of potential infection with this new variant breeds fear. That's a terrain that's been widely mined during this ferocious pandemic by politicians and the media alike. It doesn't take much to get the fear juices flowing, and our leaders too often double down on this by introducing further restrictions. Again, this is Dr. Mark Siegel of Vox News. He says people overpersonalize the risks from COVID when they are afraid. Hence, a single case in California, Minnesota, or Colorado feels like there are many more, and everyone worries they could be next. Fear is its own virus. Again, that's coming from Mark Siegel. Kind of summarizes what's been going on this week.
The southern border is still a mess, and it's a mess for the poll numbers for the administration. Tell us a little bit about the good guys at the border.
Yeah, well, let's talk about what's going on the border. I mean, there are accounts every day that just talk about how many people are still arriving and arriving and arriving on the southern U.S. border. In fact, Fox News reported that they had a guy who decided to go down to the border. And this is Bill Milligan, and he went down to the Rio Grande Valley, and he said that in the last 24 hours when he was there, the Border Patrol just at that site encountered 1,810 illegal immigrants and 179 gotaways, meaning they simply got away. And he also said that agents have had 105,226 encounters with illegal immigrants in that region since October, just in that region. This is up 164% from last year. Down in the Del Rio sector, there have been 66,000 encounters since October, up 237%. So you have to wonder, how are the agents getting along down there? And the answer to all that is they're definitely still very heroic. And the way I find this out is I check on all of their news releases that come out daily, and I just want to give you an example of sort of a day in the life of our U.S. patrol agents down there. Let's kind of spend a little time there, and here's a really small portion of what the agents encountered this week. This is according to news releases that were published on Monday and Tuesday of this week alone. U.S. Border Patrol agents assigned to Del Rio encountered and later processed 3,541 undocumented migrants from 39 different countries. And those down in Laredo, Texas, they seized bundles of suspected narcotics. That's how it was put by the U.S. Border Patrol, bundles, during an apprehension on the Rio Grande River. The bundles had an approximate weight of 900 pounds and an estimated street value of $704,592. Agents also saved a two-year-old child who was in serious medical condition south of Laredo, Texas, and they were part of a small family group that had become separated from one of the larger groups and just kind of left behind. And the Border Patrol EMTs provided medical assistance to the child until the city medical services kicked in and brought the ambulance to take the little patient to a local hospital. And here's one more situation, Rick, and this happens to be in Louisville, Kentucky, in the Louisville port of entry. And agents intercepted 89 shipments from Mexico containing controlled substances, fentanyl and methamphetamine. And that included 2 pounds of fentanyl, Rick, that were concealed inside a doll. Also, these agents intercepted 42 shipments of counterfeit handbags, watches, and jewelry that were arriving from Hong Kong. And they were valued at $3.3 million, along with $4.4 million in counterfeit currency in 10s and 20s. So that is what your Border Patrol did on 2 days this week. If you're curious, and I'm always watching this federal agency, it's cbp.gov.
Inauguration Day is coming up next month. No, not the presidential, but the gubernatorial. Tell us what to expect in Virginia.
Yes, indeed. There's some big doings coming out there in the Commonwealth, and I took notice of this for Virginia Governor-elect Glenn Youngkin, and his folks sent me his plans for his inauguration, and it's kind of an illustration of the new style that's down there in the Capitol. And let's talk about this sort of down-to-earth style. It's kind of helped Mr. Youngkin to win those voters in the Commonwealth, and that style is very much still in play. This is what's going to happen. And Mr. Youngkin said, the theme for the inauguration weekend celebrates Virginia's spirit, one linked to a rich history, but even a more exciting future. He says the official theme of the weekend is strengthen the spirit of Virginia together. And he says that's meant to reflect the spirit of America's founding fathers, liberty, freedom, and unity. Sounds pretty good to me. But anyway, here's a couple of these events, and I kind of like the sound of them. There's going to be a ladies' tea hosted by Mrs. Youngkin, and a spirit of imagination dinner, and a spirit of faith prayer breakfast. The inauguration ceremony and the parade with Lieutenant Governor-elect Winsome Sears and Attorney General-elect Jason Meares is going to center on Virginia's spirit of community, and it's going to showcase groups from all corners of the Commonwealth. Again, this is coming from Governor Youngkin himself. And here's what his folks said. They said, choosing boots over ball gowns, Governor Glenn and First Lady Suzanne Youngkin will host a uniquely casual and welcome gathering at Main Street Station featuring live music and foods from different regions of the Commonwealth. And they also noted that the couple will open the doors of the executive mansion for a traditional open house. So kind of sounds nice and not too frantic, not too showy. Sounds good.
Eagerly awaiting my invitation. Sometimes it's amazing what prices are realized at auctions, and they have celebrity auctions, and wow, those get crazy. I believe you have the results of one of them.
You know, things do get a little crazy in the auction world. There are some fans out there that just love certain celebrities, and here's one of those examples. There was a celebrity auction this past week, and this was with Los Angeles-based Julian's Auctions, a very interesting group out there, and they presented the personal property of the iconic actor Sylvester Stallone. And when all the bidding was done, here's a couple of examples of what kind of money we're talking about. A 1970s era Mead brand spiral bound notebook, which contains Sly Stallone's original handwritten script pages for Rocky, that went for $437,000. There's one of them. And second one I bring to your attention, the sale of the film legend's silk boxing trunks that were emblazoned with the American flag from the 1982 third installment of the film series Rocky III had the eye of the tiger, and they sold for an incredible $200,000. That's the value of Star Spangled Trunks, Rick, and it was 20 times the original estimate of $10,000. And again, this is Julian's Auctions out there in Los Angeles. More to come on that. They are always having these auctions.
So if you came in second at the auction and you had some money lying around, you've got a nice little piece of real estate for us?
Yes, I do. Every Friday, I often feature weekend real estate, just some interesting property that's out there. And from all over the nation, and this time we're going to go down to South Carolina, where there is a house called Old House K. And this is located on a 3-acre private island near Hilton Head Island down there in South Carolina. And it includes a very nice vacation home that was built in 2010. It comes with a 3-story observation tower. It has a wraparound porch on all sides, an open floor plan, and all this gorgeous natural wood on the interior, a chef's kitchen. Measures about 2,000 square feet. That's a nice size. And it sleeps 6. There are also wooden walkways going out to the water, a patio, dock. The property is off the grid, by the way, and solar powered. It comes with a boat slip in Windmill Harbor and a skiff. And this is priced at $2 million. And if you'd like to go see it, along with a lot of other islands, good armchair travel for today, you go to privateislandsonline.com. That's privateislandsonline.com. And all you have to do is enter, and they have a keyword search function. Just say Old House K, and it will show you all the gorgeous pictures.
Looking forward to it. Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Rick. Have a good day, everybody.
Coming up, we'll be talking with Governor Mike Huckabee. We've got Jim Trustee on the way, our legal expert. John Gizzi, KT McFarland, Cheryl Atkinson, and we'll be talking with Tony Schaefer, too. Stay with us on the Saturday Morning Update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
In the news at this hour, CNN is reporting that likely dozens have been killed in severe weather sweeping across the Midwest. The governor of Kentucky overnight has called the tornadoes there the most severe tornado event in Kentucky history. 3 people died in that severe weather in Tennessee. 1 person killed when an apparent tornado ripped through an Arkansas nursing home. Emergency crews in southern Illinois responding to reports of injuries at an Amazon warehouse after a roof collapsed. A new government report showing inflation rising at the fastest rate in nearly 4 decades is raising fresh questions about the fate of President Biden's social and environmental legislation. Both sides seeking clues on how the numbers may influence pivotal Democratic Senator Joe Manchin. The West Virginia Democrat has spent months forcing Democrats to trim the 10-year, $2 trillion package. He's pointedly noted rising inflation as a reason to go slow. It's 6:33, time for a check of the traffic and weather, and Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In D.C. right now on 295, 395, and 695, I have no reports of any delays. Now into Virginia, on the Beltway, express lanes in Annandale, northbound, there is road construction. Roadway is reduced down to 1 lane between the express lanes entrance on the south end and 66. On 66, westbound in Centerville, there is construction. 2 lanes are closed right at 28, the Centerville exit, exit 53. And on 95 in Virginia, it's all clear, northbound and southbound, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. You're at the posted speed limit. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. Very warm and windy out ahead of a strong cold front. Temperatures today near 70 degrees, which would be a record high for the day. Also have the chance for some showers and storms, some gusty storms along the cold front later on this evening. Thinking anytime after 5 o'clock, continuing through 10, 11 o'clock tonight, a wind advisory has been issued for the entire D.C. area. As we head later on overnight, winds will diminish some, still breezy as we get through early tomorrow morning. Lows back in the 30s to near 40 degrees. Highs tomorrow cooler under mostly sunny skies near 50 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Ligon at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
54 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:35 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Rick Fowler, and we are joined by, well, let's see, we could call him governor, we could call him pastor, we could call him author, we could call him journalist, we could call him presidential candidate, but we'll call him Governor Mike Huckabee. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Rick. Look, I got to tell you, I get called some stuff that's a whole lot worse than any of the monikers that you just mentioned. And so thank you for at least saying the nice things and not the stuff that people say to me on Twitter.
Well, there is some big news for you, and that is the Christmas in America special that you will be hosting. And it's coming up this week on Newsmax, premieres Wednesday night on Newsmax TV. And I'm really looking forward to this. Tell us what's on the show.
It's going to be a real fun and uplifting celebration of Christmas in America. It's not a political show, which is going to be a little different for both Newsmax and me. It's really a show to talk about how Christmas is observed in America, not only by Christians, but even appreciated and respected by people who are Jewish or Muslim. It's a cultural event as well as a religious holiday. Of course, for people like me who are Christian, it is the centerpiece of our faith, but it is also an American tradition, and it's something that brings the country together historically, and so we celebrate Christmas. We have music on the show. We have a lot of different people who will offer greetings and their personal perspectives, one of whom is a gentleman that, well, has some notoriety. Former President Donald Trump is one of the people that I sat down with at Mar-a-Lago and talked to him about why Christmas matters to him and why he felt it was so important to bring back the simple expression of Merry Christmas after years of being pushed to ignore the word Christmas and just say Happy Holidays. So we talk about that. We have Joe Namath, who's going to be one of our guests. We just have a host of people that really encompass the world of journalism and sports and entertainment, musical guests that will be thrilling and joyful. It's going to be a fun, put up your feet, sit back in the Lazy Boy, and enjoy an hour's worth of wonderful celebration of an American Christmas.
And what is the setting for the show?
You know, we really do it in many different settings. I mean, it's from Mar-a-Lago to places in Nashville and across the country. So it's not just one setting. It's not a staged event. It's really a potpourri of conversations with and recollections with people from around the country. There's one particular guest in the show that, well, I think she's pretty good, pretty smart and articulate. And I know her fairly well. In fact, I've celebrated every one of her Christmases with her. And that's my daughter, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who will most likely be the next governor of Arkansas. But next week, she'll just be talking about celebrating Christmas as a kid growing up and now celebrating it with her three children.
It's the holiday season, and, you know, we all feel good and warm feelings around the holidays. The only problem is there's not such a warm feeling when it comes to politics, and it seems to be worsening. And I guess a question for you is, what would you say to people in Washington when you look at the infighting? Initially it was the Democrats, now there's infighting among the Republicans. And what kind of advice would you give them?
I would tell them to quit firing at each other in the foxhole. There's no future in shooting at each other when there is a real threat to this country, a threat to it economically, militarily, and even morally. And so when I see Republicans sniping each other, I want to say to them, stop it. Look, we don't have time for this. The battle is too big, and it's a bigger battle than you and some other Republican who are getting into it. And if you have to have some disagreements, which we all have, take it behind closed doors. Don't conduct it on social media. Don't conduct it on television and cable news. Go behind closed doors, sit down, look at each other in the eye, and go after it. But when it's over, shut that door and leave that conversation behind and take the fight to the socialists who are trying to ruin this country and take America to the place of the ash heap That's not what we need to be doing as Republicans, is joining in and helping dismantle the country by focusing on something that is not helping us fight the real fight.
You were a governor, so how did you get the legislators, you have Democrats and Republicans, how did you get them to a common denominator? We don't seem to find a common denominator anymore anywhere in politics. How do you get them to that point?
Well, Rick, for me, it was a little difficult in that, you know, I had a legislature that when I first went in was 89 Democrats to 11 Republicans in the House and 31 Democrats and 4 Republicans in the Senate. Now, those numbers have gotten better, and now we're a supermajority state, all Republican, almost up and down the entire board. But it was a challenge, and I can assure you that when I was that Republican governor, only the third Republican governor in Arkansas history, only the fourth Republican elected to a statewide office in 150 years, there was nobody who said, hey, let's help this Republican look good. So the great question to ask is, how do you get people to work together? And I did it by conducting what I call vertical politics, because I say that most people who practice in the world of politics practice it horizontally, left, right, liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican. And frankly, the average American sitting down at Waffle House for breakfast is not looking at life horizontally. They're looking at it vertically. What they want to know is my job going to pay me better? Am I going to be able to put enough aside for retirement? Are my kids going to be able to afford to go to trade school or college? Are we going to take a vacation next year? Can I add a room onto the house when the new baby comes? They're looking at things vertically. Is it better? Is it worse? Is it good? Is it bad? And when political persons start looking at policies in terms of up and down rather than right and left, it's transformative. And that's what I would urge Republicans to start doing. Quit selling us horizontal policies. Sell us vertical policies. Tell us what you want to do, but tell us how it's going to help the guy who's lifting heavy things all day, standing on a concrete floor and doing damage to his legs every day doing it. That's how you win the country.
We had the honor of speaking with you in 2015 when you announced your presidential candidacy, the day of. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you what your intentions are in 2024.
Well, Rick, it's good that you asked, because I can announce on your show with absolute assurance that I will not be running for president in 2024, or probably any other year either. Because you can only mortgage your house so many times to run for office. And then at some point, your wife puts a gun to your head and says, I don't know if you realize it, but you're done.
Well, we're sorry to hear that. We would have enjoyed having you in the race and in the White House as well, because you'd have a great press secretary if you got back in there. The Christmas in America special coming up this week, and produced by a couple of the best in the business. Dick Arlett and Arthur Bernstein have produced a number of specials, and just a wonderful group you're working with.
They're really top-rate professionals. Dick Arlett is a veteran of probably 60 years in the television business. He was Bob Hope's producer of all of his specials. He worked for the Today Show. He's done literally around the world, global television specials, and is one of the premier guys. And Arthur Bernstein, a young and very gifted producer, they've done a great job. My job really was just to be the host, so I had the easiest job in the whole production. But people need to be reminded that Christmas is a time to bring people together, bring families together. So I hope they won't miss it. It'll be run several times on Newsmax throughout the Christmas holidays, but the premiere is Wednesday evening, December the 15th, 9 p.m. Central. People can always set their DVR and tape it and watch it whenever it's convenient. I promise it's worth watching. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Governor Mike Huckabee, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and we're looking forward to the show.
Thank you, Rick. Great to be with you, and Merry Christmas to you.
Christmas in America, premiering Wednesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern Time on Newsmax TV. 6:45, Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, you're going to be at the posted speed limit, all clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. If you're traveling between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway or on 95, No reason to tap your brakes. All lanes are open and at the posted speed limit north and south. In Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, no delays on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. And on 270 in Montgomery County between the Beltway and Frederick, you're at speed north and south. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny, very warm and windy out ahead of a strong cold front. Temperatures today near 70 degrees. We'll also have the chance for some showers and gusty storms later on this evening. Thinking anytime after 5 o'clock, continuing through 10, 11 o'clock tonight, a wind advisory has been issued for the entire D.C. area. Later on overnight, winds will diminish. Sun still breezy as we get through early tomorrow morning. Lows back in the 30s to near 40 degrees. Highs tomorrow cooler under mostly sunny skies near 50 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Ligon at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
54 degrees at WMAL, 646 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We're joined by Jim Trusty. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, our legal expert. He is the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Former Empire actor Jussie Smollett convicted Thursday in connections with the allegations he had faked a racist and homophobic crime on himself in January of 2019. Then lied to the Chicago police about the alleged incident. Jim, tell us about the guilty verdict. What was he convicted of?
Smollett was convicted on 5 out of 6 counts of disorderly conduct. And in Illinois law, disorderly conduct can cover a lot of different types of behaviors. For this case, what it's focusing on is false statements to police officers. So he has 5 counts, each carrying a maximum potential penalty of 3 years, so they're serious felonies, and he'll have a sentencing sometime next year.
Well, it's interesting because you hear disorderly conduct, you think it's somebody getting drunk in a bar and they do a night in the slammer and that's it. But this is really serious.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of levels. In Maryland, for instance, or Virginia, you would just refer to it as a false statement case or perhaps a false alarm case. But you know, these charges are serious, and I think there's two things to think about. The first is, obviously, when you make false claims like he did, you're tying up police resources. And I would say Chicago is probably the one city that really doesn't need wasted time when it comes to the police investigating things. And that's kind of the primary focus people tend to have in these cases. But when you really, you know, drill down on this particular claim, his conduct was effectively a hate crime of its own. You know, he demonized Trump supporters. He had the current vice president of the United States talking about modern day lynch mobs. I mean, this was a very hateful lie by a very small man. And I think the repercussions, and this is something hopefully a judge will consider, extend far beyond the usual problem of a false claim or a false alarm in terms of police resources.
So in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, they put him on the stand. They put Jussie Smollett on the stand. Good idea, bad idea?
Borderline terrible idea. you know, and we talked last week about my, you know, my suggestion that at least one of his attorneys was a little bit out there and was not particularly serving him well when she accused the judge of assaulting her during a trial about false claims of crimes. You know, maybe he was an impossible client to keep off the stand. I mean, that's always a possibility that he is so convinced of his utter charm that, you know, it doesn't really matter what the attorneys tell him. But I think what it does by putting him on the stand and echoing and kind of drilling down on the lies, doubling up on them in a strong case, I think it puts a lot of pressure on this judge to consider incarceration where maybe they otherwise would not.
When Jussie Smollett got on the stand, he continued to lie. And there was even video evidence of them rehearsing the crime. So has he committed perjury, and would that somehow be factored in? Would somebody charge him with committing perjury at this point?
Well, it'll certainly be factored in by the judge. I mean, the judge has a lot of discretion here. He doesn't need a formal perjury charge, but he saw the trial. He heard the evidence. The testimony of Smollett was completely contradictory to the evidence. And necessarily rejected. I mean, the jury could not convict beyond a reasonable doubt if they believed Jussie's insistence that this really happened. So it is a very typical aggravator at the time of sentencing for a judge to consider. In the federal system, it actually changes your sentencing guidelines if you take the stand and lie. So, yeah, it's going to enhance the potential penalties for this guy because it shows a complete lack of remorse.
Jim, there hasn't been a lot of media attention to the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. Give us an update of where that stands. And any bombshells this week?
Yeah, plenty of bombshells, but you're right. It doesn't get the kind of coverage that a fully televised trial gets or even Smollett's trial. So this week, the prosecution rested yesterday after about two dozen witnesses or so. They chose to end strong. They ended with a series of young women who described Maxwell as recruiting them, as kind of, in effect, seducing them to come and spend time with her and Jeffrey. And they also crossed over into the line of not just recruiting, but Ghislaine Maxwell committing sexual offenses against them as well. So these now young women testified about conduct from between 1994 and 2004 with vigorous cross-examination. And now we've broken from the government's case. Motions to dismiss were routinely argued and denied. And the defense will begin presenting their case on Thursday. They've telegraphed that it will be no more than 4 days. Frankly, I'd be surprised if it's that much. I think, for a case like this, I'd be very surprised if Maxwell testified. And I'd be surprised if there's more than just a few small witnesses that fill maybe about a day of the defense case before closing argument.
There was speculation about a number of prominent names that could be tangled up in this. I mean, reports from the pilot that Bill Clinton flew on the aircraft 17 times. If this does not come out from Maxwell, if she just doesn't cooperate on any of that, does it just go to the grave with Jeffrey Epstein, or is it possible somehow it will come out somewhere else? I thought the FBI went in there and did a thorough investigation of the place. I don't know.
Yeah, they did a thorough investigation of both the New York residents and the Orgy Island, as it's referred to, and apparently recovered a lot of digital evidence, photographs, videos, even ledger-type things. I mean, you know, from the beginning, I think everyone knew, and probably some very high-profile people feared, that if Ghislaine Maxwell decided to cooperate, she could narrate the whole story of Jeffrey Epstein with vivid evidence backing it up. And so, you know, the biggest question, the big war here, has already been fought, which is she going to cooperate? And it changes the nature of the case dramatically. It's less germane to the trial to talk about Bill Clinton, Prince Andrew, anybody else, and more to focus on literally what Maxwell did with the young women, and that seems to be the way the trial went. I should mention, Rick, that under the federal system, most often cooperation is determined, you know, pre-trial and long before trial, and the person has to admit guilt to be deemed a worthy cooperator. But there are rare occasions where a person will go to trial, particularly if they don't testify, and after they're convicted, they may still try to make a run at cooperation. So we can't say it's 100% precluded, but it's probably in the high 90s that Maxwell is never going to help narrate a broader case against some of the high-profile people that hung out with Jeffrey Epstein.
You brought up an interesting point. So she rolls the dice. She's hoping she doesn't get convicted. So if she is convicted and facing some serious jail time, does she have the ability then to cooperate to negotiate for a lesser sentence, or is the fate sealed at this point if she is convicted?
Yeah, it's not completely sealed. And so there's room to try to negotiate a plea even while the case is pending sentencing. It's very uphill, and the prosecutor is holding all the cards. So the prosecutor might say, okay, well, you're going to, stay convicted of all of these counts. You're going to agree to the following sentencing guidelines. You're going to waive an appeal, and you're going to come in and talk to me. And if I think you're honest and if I think you're helpful, then I'll at least raise that at the time you're sentencing so you get a reduction. So there's still a procedure in place where she could mitigate the damage a little bit. But again, it's rare. Most of the time, you know, that avenue has probably been explored, probably been rejected by either one or both of the parties. We don't know if she's already gone in and proffered information that was rejected. But again, if she's got a clean slate where she's never come in and talked to the government and she doesn't testify, there's at least some possibility that she could still try to sell that information to her benefit.
I want to turn to some comments from the district attorney in Philadelphia, Larry Krasner. His murder rate is up 13% this year, 523 murders in Philadelphia. And he, in a press conference on Monday, says, "We don't have a crisis of crime." He walked it back late in the week, but just because somebody walks it back doesn't mean they don't feel the same way. The reason people walk things back is they're being toasted in the media, and that's all they can do to get the attention off them. You, as a former prosecutor at the U.S. Department of Justice, how did Krasner's comments strike you?
Well, maybe as typical Krasner. I mean, look, this is a guy who has made a living going after the police in Philadelphia. He's a Soros-funded progressive prosecutor of the likes of Kimberly Fox in Chicago. And I think even he realized that when you have 523 bodies on the streets of Philadelphia, that maybe the politics aren't so good for his progressive agenda. So he got up there and tried to, you know, come up with some justification that we don't really have a big problem because some other unarmed crime is down. Of course, my question is, does that just mean they've graduated to using guns? Because
exactly.
The most violent crimes are through the roof. 523 murders for a city the size of Philadelphia is really outrageous. And again, what you see with the progressive prosecutors that contributes to the long-term nature of this problem is they run out the career prosecutors. They run out the experienced police officers who think to themselves, why would I stick around for another year or two when I can draw a decent pension now and get away from this nightmare? So that's not going to be good for Philadelphia over the long run. And Larry Krasner has his fingerprints all over this problem.
Wouldn't he be better as a public defender? I mean, isn't the role of the district attorney to prosecute criminals?
Oh, my sweet, naive Rick. Yeah, I mean, they are absolutely supposed to be enforcing the laws of the state that they're in. But the problem is when they get funded, say, $500,000, $1 million in a local DA's race, running on this extremely progressive agenda that is much more ideological than it is practical, they come into office with a public defender's perspective, and I mean a true believer public defender's perspective, and they gut the notions of law and order that are in place. And so whether it's questions of bail, questions of legitimizing certain types of crimes and saying we're not going to prosecute them, or just taking a general soft approach on even the most sensational murder cases, that's what you're seeing in these cities, and it's really creating a culture of lawlessness.
Well, we can always hope for a recall in Philadelphia. If anybody's listening up there, start the petition. Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. As always, Jim, great to get your perspectives, and have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too. Have a good one.
7 o'clock news next with Maria Leaf, then John Gizzi joins us. We've got Cheryl Atkinson, KT McFarland, and Tony Schaefer on the way.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL, a Cumulus Media station.